Welcome to the Back to the Garden podcast, the podcast discussing all things child development. We'll be meeting with experienced professionals and specialists, along with the leading entrepreneurs in the childcare sector. Children are the future. How do we give them the best start? I'm Sadie Pickering, and we'll be diving into ways to nurture them in their early years, from physical, cognitive, and emotional support. How can we forge a natural approach in this modern world? Join us to find out. We are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. So today's guests are Jeannie and Stuart Pickering. They founded Kids Unlimited Nurseries in 1983. Beginning with one, the nursery business grew, which changed the face of childcare through their philosophies and approaches. Jeannie and Stuart are now back in the childcare sector, making more waves to improve the care of children through their nursery, Back to the Garden Childcare, which they founded with the McGough Group. And they just happen to be my mum and dad. So welcome to the podcast. First of all, I'd like to start with your earliest memory or a pivotal moment for you during your childhood, if we start with you, Jeannie.
A pivotal moment would probably be when I realised I had the power and the ability to achieve something when I was being told no. And that was a pair of shoes, which I'd seen in a shop window, and went home and my mum said, no, you can't have them, we can't afford them. And I thought, I have to have these shoes. And so I took it upon myself to find ways of getting the money for those shoes, whether it be washing somebody's car, brushing somebody's path, or taking what were then old pop bottles back and getting 3p on them. And I achieved those shoes. And that memory has stayed with me forever because it was this ability to realise that when somebody says you can't, if you have a will and a passion, you actually can.
I should probably say I'm hosting this podcast, but I am actually Jeannie and Stuart's daughter. So I have grown up in childcare with them running their businesses. So
and she survived.
If I call them mum or dad, that's why I did call you Jeannie then. Felt a bit weird.
Yeah.
So, Dad, what's your earliest childhood memory or pivotal moment for you?
Well, it's very relevant to current situation. My earliest memory was 3 years old, being very ill with measles. And I was actually saved by penicillin, by antibiotics at the time. And we lived in a prefab, which was a post-war building when all the houses were destroyed. We lived in this little prefab. And I remember having a green. They were all around a green and all the kids would play out. And it was such a warm family environment. It's beautiful. But that was the first memory, me almost dying from measles and Yikes. Pneumonia.
I'd love to know the reasons behind you starting up Kids Unlimited with the first nursery in Wilmslow. And also, were there any concerns about running a business together as a couple?
The reason for starting up Kids Unlimited was I had my first child. I was a teacher. I wanted to continue working. I didn't feel it was detrimental for a child to go to a nursery and for me to be able to pursue my career, because I believe it's all about balance. And as I searched, I found there was a huge gap because it was either state-run nurseries where it was quite difficult to get places, or pretty much prep schools where it was putting ticks against work in exercise books, which I didn't feel was appropriate for a two-year-old. So because I couldn't find it, and because we were pursuing another area in recording, we were actually running recording studios, which, you know, in the music business, you can either make a fair bit of money or maybe you don't make so much at all, which we weren't. And so when Stuart talked about getting another overdraft for the recording studio, I said, hang on a minute, I'm going to set up a nursery. And that's what we did. And here we are now.
Here we are now. And did you have any concerns about running a business together as a couple?
We didn't have any concerns at the time, but obviously working together, living together, having a family together, has its own challenges.
But so long as I had the first choice and I was in control, we were okay.
the way it worked, Genie developed the philosophy and the curriculum, and every time we needed to expand the business, she and I said, no, we can't actually do that. We can't, the bank won't lend us any more. She'd say, go out and find a way of doing it. So she's a real driver.
So then Dad would go and then pull Absolutely. Things together and make
push,
it work.
With a push. Yeah.
But you needed pushing from...
Definitely.
And to believe that it was actually going to work.
And in terms of the approach, what was your childcare philosophy back then?
Very much to put the child at the centre. And within that, staffing was very important to get the right people on board, to get the right philosophy, to create the right environment. But basically, it was the child at the centre. And the centre for me was very much a creative approach, because I had worked in a school which was at that time called an experimental school, where we had children coming for 3-week blocks. It was in the centre of Heaton Park, amazing school.
And what was that called?
Parkside. And we had visiting teachers. And it was when I was working with those children, and what we'd work with was a spark of an idea, and the children would work in the way that they would want to, and we would facilitate how those sparks of ideas could work. So they'd either work through art, through movement, through poetry, through literature, and we'd take them on something like a wet walk, because we're in the centre of Heaton Park, and that would be their focus for how they would want to work. And it was when I worked with children, and when they were working with what they were happy with, it was great. But as soon as you tried to move them into other areas, I had children of 7 saying to me, I'm rubbish at that, miss. I can't do that. And I'm like, who could possibly say to a child before they're 7 that they actually can't do something? They may find it challenging, but it's all about encouragement. And at that point, I think the idea came to me is we need to capture children almost before they start school. So we need to build on these early years. And that's where the whole philosophy started about, you know, we build on a sense of creativity, of purpose, of well-being, of confidence. And we have a responsibility as staff to create those environments where children can flourish.
So that moment with, say, for example, the child that would have said, I can't do that, I'm rubbish at that, miss, that judgment hadn't come from the child, it had to have come from somewhere else.
Well,
because how would they know if they're good or bad at something at that age?
Yeah, and it's a judgment call. And so, when I actually started the nurseries, I would find it quite challenging when parents would pick up their child and the child would have created a piece of art, their art, and the parent would say, well, what's that? Or even screw it up, because it was perceived as scribble.
And so it's educating
absolutely
the parents as well as the children.
So absolutely.
Leading on from that, I'd love to hear a memory of a moment that you really had a breakthrough with a parent.
I remember Jeannie having, in inverted commas, discussions with the odd parent who would be saying, well, that child over there can come right, you know. And why is my child not writing to that level?
I think the example that you're actually talking about was about reading. And it was a parent whose child wasn't reading and their sort of next door neighbour's child was reading at the same age. And she insisted that I had to get that child to read because she was paying me to do that. And I said, we have to wait for the reading readiness to come from the child, otherwise we're forcing them into situations where they're not ready. Mm-hmm. And it was very much my call to say, if that's what you feel, my purpose is here to force your child to read, then you're not in the right place.
And did that parent take the child somewhere else, or did they stay?
No, she stayed. I think she was a bit surprised because we were standing ground. And I think, again, it's one of these situations where she had the best interests of her child, but it is about educating the parent and being confident to do that and saying to the parent, if you just wait, all will be fine. And children will catch up with one another and it'll all level out at the end of the day. And the child stayed, the parent became a very close friend, and all was well.
That's great. I remember another story where you mentioned about water and a parent thinking that you were scrimping by giving the children water.
Yeah,
that
we stopped the Ribena.
And they were cross.
We stopped the Ribena and we actually stopped the orange juice because if the children have it in the morning and we weren't doing teeth cleaning at that time, and that stays on their teeth throughout the day. It also, I mean, water is the best thing, I believe. It, you know, it's there for children to drink and it has a beautiful taste, but it won't taste so well if the child's palate has been subjected to Ribena and such like. So we pulled that and said, we're giving children water. And I think Stuart was accosted in the supermarket and told we were, you know, trying to make more money by giving children water rather than this fruit juice. Just another
That's
challenge.
That's an amazing story. Yep. But very, very different now, I think.
Absolutely.
Most people now understand.
Yeah.
But it's breaking the mould.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we actually provide a stainless steel drinking container for children in the nursery now. So they can top up water whenever they like.
Be independent.
What about a memory, a time when you saw you'd really made a difference with a child?
I think the one situation was the reading scenario, but there was another situation where we had a child who just didn't want to be in the nursery and would cling and cling, and I would, you know, have him with me for a lot of the time. And I've said maybe they're not settling, and the parents said, no, I really, we want them to stay here. It's a wonderful environment. And again, it was just about the caring, the holding, which you could do then, and you could put them on your knee and hold and show this affection to make the child feel that they're comfortable and they're in a safe place. And it probably took nearly a month to settle this child. And once they were settled, they just flourished in the nursery. And I think probably a couple of years ago, I saw the child who's late 20s now, and he survived. And his parents said, you know, I think it was a huge point in his life to actually come to nursery, to actually experience all the things and the being independent, being sociable with other children. And so that was quite an interesting one.
And rewarding for you.
Very rewarding.
You really made a difference.
Yeah.
What about a funny story?
Oh, a couple of funny stories. there was one when we decided to paint all the floors red and over a weekend, and they looked absolutely beautiful on Monday morning when we opened the doors to all the children. And, you know, children in Wilmslow used to come, you know, quite beautifully dressed and ready for nursery action, maybe not, you know, best shoes and all things like that. And I can remember horrified because in this particular room with the red floor paint, the children were on the bikes. And as they were riding the bikes across the floor, the paint wasn't dry. And so these beautiful shoes became red shoes and their knees became slightly red, and thought, wow, we're going to have a big insurance claim here. But again, it's all about relationships with parents. And if you can all laugh together about something, then it was fine.
How come you chose Wilmslow? Why did it start in Wilmslow?
It was a bit of a Yellow Pages thing. It was a bit of in Cheshire, let's have a look and see where there are nurseries. We were living in Cheadlehume at the time, and we moved into rented accommodation in Wilmslow, and we actually just targeted it as an area to look at.
And you found that beautiful building on Gravel Lane.
Yeah, but it took 2 years to find that building because we were faced with planning issues wherever we wanted to go. At that time, there weren't any big chains of nurseries like there are now. There weren't this approach with people that it's okay, like, to have a school, it's okay to have a nursery. We just got neighbours, oh, not in our oasis, not in our backyard, we don't want screaming children, we don't want all this. So in a way, coming from a teaching background, I suddenly started to learn how to develop skills of public relations and, you know, how you could take on planners and things like that. And again, it's, you know, it's if you believe that you're doing something right, then you weave your way through with honesty and integrity. And also a belief that, you know, this is going to happen. And purely by chance, we got a phone call one evening from this lady who was running a playgroup in this amazing house called Claremont in Wilmslow, who said, I'm thinking of moving on. Would you be interested? And we were, and we dived in. We had £5,000. We didn't have a house, so that was all we had, £5,000 in the bank. And we went to the bank. It was a cooperative bank at the time.
Cooperative bank, yeah.
And they lent us the money to buy this Victorian house. And when we first opened, we were living on the first floor. And as it grew, we ended up in the attic. And at that time, Stuart was still working in the recording business. And we were sort of living over the shop, so to speak. And it started off very small. It was quite an interesting concept when we started off in Wilmslow, because all that existed were playgroups. And again, I got a lot of criticism that people would not want full daycare. Nobody would want to put their child in an environment for all day. And so we started it off, and a lot of children came for just the morning. But we had an amazing cook and we had an amazing menu, because at that particular time we were ahead of the game in terms of no colourings, no preservatives. Let's have a healthy diet. Let's have family meal times. Let's all serve together. Let's be sociable. And gradually the parents who were there for the morning thought, wow, can they stay for lunch? And maybe if they stay for lunch, can they stay for the afternoon? And what transpired from that is, and it's mainly, at that time, it was mainly women having the choice to go back to work. And so we opened a door for parents, I could say mainly at that time women, but it still was parents, to have the choice that if they had a child and they wanted to go back to work, they could, because we were offering full daycare, which wasn't the sort of rule of thumb at that time.
So interesting, because it's like not just allowing the parent to be able to work, it's actually giving the children their own little community.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yes.
Like, so they're really socializing, they're together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the benefits,
yeah,
are both ways.
Yeah.
If you have the right setting,
yeah,
for them.
Because we actually had, in some cases, families who had nannies, and the nanny was dropping off at the nursery. So although they had childcare at home in the form of a nanny, they were wanting to use the nursery because of everything that we were offering.
Because it's beyond
in
childcare.
In terms of curriculum.
It's not just care.
Social,
yeah,
and everything.
So what was one of the biggest challenges you faced in the Kids Unlimited early years?
I'll leave that one to Stuart.
Well, as Jeannie said, we had this big Victorian double-fronted detached building in Wilmslow. And in essence, we had created the demand, demand that hadn't existed. So we had a full nursery within 12, 18 months. And we thought, what are we going to do? You know, it's we have no space for anybody. That's a demand there. So we spotted that the bungalow next to us, next building, was up for sale. And we thought, oh, we'll buy that and go for planning on it. So we bought that, except that at the point we were about to complete, the bank pulled the funding. So there was a huge challenge in renegotiating a mortgage on it. We eventually did it. I remember looking out of the attic where we were living, the top floor of the building, and looking at the people leaving this bungalow with furniture, etc., and think, oh, the money's gone. It hasn't happened. Anyway, we managed to do it. And
I can remember Stuart saying we can't do it. And I'm like,
that was another.
That is not an option.
That was
that
a situation.
Is not an option. We have to do it.
So we bought the bungalow, moved into it, and went for planning. And that was the time when we had neighbours across the road with councillors saying, no nursery, we don't want a nursery there. And Jeannie actually pulled the flanker on this one, because the council meeting, she'd notified all of the other councillors, sent them a note, a letter, except for the one that was campaigning against us. So arrived at the planning meeting, and all these councillors had this information except for this one. And of course, he was really slightly annoyed about that. But anyway, it went through.
Never forgave us, I don't think.
No, no. And following that, we were full again, and we saw the Refuge Assurance moving to Wilmslow and thought, workplace nursery, 600 staff coming here. So that was our next step.
Actually, that was something I wanted to chat to you about, workplace nursery, because that wasn't commonplace back then.
No.
So can you chat a little bit about workplace nurseries?
Yes. The Midland Bank at the time, due to a thing called the demographic time bomb, they needed people back in the workplace. There was a shortage of qualified people. The Midland Bank, which is now HSBC, were desperate to recruit staff. And they had a personnel director that said, we're going to open nurseries all over the country. And the concept of a workplace nursery, because we had this workplace nursery, we were the only company in the country that had one. So we had all sorts of people, companies coming to visit us. And really that was the driver for expanding our business. And we managed to achieve the Midland Bank contracts with, it was Thomas Cook. We ended up doing Body Shop Nursery, Oxford University, Cambridge University, Amnesty International, loads of companies, organisations around the country. And that's what grew our business at the time.
It was quite interesting because we had a lot of, we were quite innovative with the workplace really, because once we'd got the bungalow and the bungalow was full and the main house was full, we'd heard that the Refuge Assurance Company, as it was then, was coming to Wilmslow. And by then, I'd moved from teacher mode into quite business driven. And I was taking on skills such as marketing. And I couldn't imagine them coming and me not being able to find places for them, because it was a business opportunity that they were coming with however many staff. And so it from that came the idea, let's go and talk to them about doing it on their site. The other thing that that meant was we weren't having to fund, they were funding. So it allowed us to grow without having to keep going back to the banks and generating more money ourselves. And so that concept then gave us two private nurseries and one workplace nursery in the setting in Wilmslow, which then allowed us to be a model for Midland Bank as they came on board. At that time, because we got the Midland Bank contract, but also I'd gone through this thing about thinking, well, who has got the right mindset and philosophy to feel that it's important to get parents back into the workplace? And I thought of Richard Branson, but he didn't bite, if that's the right phrase. But Anita Roddick was like on my radar completely. And I can remember cold calling these people and not having a script or anything like that in terms of how I was going to sell it. I was just selling purely on belief and passion that we could offer something that they would want. And it coincided with them already having a plan to build £1 million nursery in Littlehampton in East Sussex, West Sussex,
West Sussex, 1993 this was.
Just to clarify, just in case any of the listeners don't know, Anita Roddick was the founder of the Body Shop.
Yeah. And what a powerhouse of energy, and what a person for us to have the privilege of working with, because she wasn't going to shortchange anything. She wanted the most environmental building, and we're talking about...
This is 1993, yeah. So she was so far ahead of her time.
She was so on it, and it was just amazing to have the privilege of working with her and her husband, Gordon. And I can remember when we went into her office, because she was such a powerhouse, quite intimidating, really. When she walked in, you could feel the energy coming up the corridor before she even arrived. And I was fascinated because it was when she was visiting all the tribal places and coming back with bird poo and all sorts of things on trays that were going into all the products. And I was just fascinated by this whole thing. And just, it was just an amazing time for us to have worked with her. And it was such a shame that she died so young. But, you know, the nursery continues now. So the fact that we were working with her, we were working with Midland Bank, we then became a bit the equivalent of pop stars in the childcare business, because Breakfast TV wanted to interview us. we were always at the forefront of any conferences. And I think we spent a couple of years really promoting the whole concept of workplace nurseries and bringing, you know, women back to work.
So you were childcare pioneers. And you inspired probably many other nurseries that then followed. Yeah. And that's changed the lives of all those children that have been to those kind of nurseries that just didn't exist in this country. And we're going back to environmental things and design. What was behind the design of the nurseries? Did they differ? Did you have the kind of the same idea that ran through all of them? Who did you work with?
It was very much that the design of each building would have its own integrity, but the underlying philosophy would be there. So at that time, we were being as environmental as we could be then. We believed the environment is the third teacher. And I also believed that aesthetics are very important for both children and for parents and for the staff, because you need to be comfortable in your space to flourish. And all those people, staff, children, parents, all need to flourish in that environment. And then it becomes a community. And that community then grows together. We visited nurseries in Europe. My main influence was the Reggio Emilia area in Italy, where they really believed in art, the arts being at the centre of creativity. And I remember going to Italy, and again, they were becoming quite popular here in terms of a philosophy, and people were going on tours there. So you had to wait like 2 years for a tour. But I couldn't wait 2 years, so I got on a plane and just arrived. I don't know how, I don't speak any Italian, but I got myself to what the equivalent of social services in Italy. And this particular nursery that I'd wanted to see, it was Diana, Nursery Diana.
We can find out and reference that in the show notes.
I actually went and just knocked on the door and asked. I said, I've come all the way from England. Is it possible for me to have a look around? And they said, well, we're all on lunch, but you're very welcome to have a look around, which was just like perfect for me, because I didn't want a tour. I wanted to be able to open the drawers and open the cupboards and talk to the children and see what was going on. And so it was perfect. They also made a lot of their own furniture and toys. So I was making triangular mirrors, light tables, which again, nurseries have now, but this time nobody had these innovative things. So, and also going back to the environment and saying that, you know, different settings were limited in terms of the design and the architecture. And one of the things that I didn't want was I didn't want us to become the McDonald's of the nurseries. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want every knob.
Carry on. That's
every knob to be the same, and but we had a fundamental space layout of home bases, so we could create an environment where we could take a number of children but make it homely. So we had these home bases, and that was a concept which we developed, and nurseries are using that now. So in answer to the environment, it needs to be flexible, it needs to take on board its surroundings, it needs to take on shape, but at the end of the day, it's what you put in that environment, the colours you use, the windows to see the light, what you do with the garden. And so that was the philosophy. But the actual nature of the shape of the building could be different for different settings. And that also meant that if we were doing one in an actual workplace setting and it wasn't a new build, we could work with the space that we had.
We're taking a short break from this fascinating episode to introduce today's amazing sponsor, Kit & Kin. They are trailblazers in the nappy world, and we are proud users of them in our nursery. Can you believe that the third largest contributor to landfill is disposable nappies? In the UK alone, we go through 8 million every day. With climate change clearly having an impact, Kit & Kin have given us an eco-friendly alternative to take care of our babies' bottoms and our planet at the same time. Their multi-award-winning nappies are made using plant-based, sustainable materials, as well as being unbleached and dioxin-free.
They are clinically tested to ensure they're hypoallergenic and approved by dermatologists. And they come in the cutest animal designs. To make this company even more incredible, for every 10 subscriptions, they fund the purchase of 1 acre of threatened rainforest through the World Land Trust. Head over to kittenkin.com and use the discount code BABY20, specially created for our listeners to receive 20% off their first subscription order. They have a range of wipes, skincare and baby wear too. Now back to the discussion.
So in terms of nursery design, what about the architecture of the nursery? Did you work with architects?
We'd worked on a number of workplace nurseries, and it got to the stage where we were about to, well, we'd achieved investment and we were going to build the first purpose-built nursery for our company. So we took our architect, Roger Stevenson, of Manchester, quite a well-known architect. We actually took him to Holland and Germany, and we visited nurseries in Frankfurt, in around Amsterdam, and got a lot of inspiration around, you know, how they designed them, because they're a bit more advanced than the UK at that time. So we brought Roger back, and he designed our first purpose-built nursery in Wilmslow, in Summerfield, Wilmslow. And it was very much linking the inside and the outside. There was quite a flow through to the outside area. And we developed this concept of pairs of home bases that worked as a unit, so children could group in one unit early in the morning and then spill out into the two. One could be a messy area, one could be a more clean area.
And the atelier.
And then for the preschool, we'd have this atelier based on the Italian model, the Reggio Emilia, where very much an art-based area. So all the art materials would be around and children could pick and choose what they wanted to work with. We'd set up various stages around the room. But anyway, this nursery, it achieved RIB awards. You know, it was state of the art. It's still there. It's owned by another company now, but I won't mention that. And furthermore, we bought this building in Hume, in Manchester. One of my old colleagues at university, Barbara McLaughlin, was running the Hume Regeneration Project. And if people know Manchester, Hume was a very run-down area, had all these walkways, walkway buildings, high decks, and it was very much there was a lot of drugs and gangs and all sorts of stuff going on. So this was a regeneration area. And she said, it needs a nursery. So we bought this old church school building. It still had the girls and the boys' door, but it was derelict. And we bought this, and our architect rang us and said, I see smoke rising from this building. I think it's yours. And somebody had set fire to it. So Roger redesigned this building, and that one achieved awards. It was a beautiful building, serving the local community. I said it was a regeneration area, so it was a rundown area, regenerated. And it really did serve that local community.
It was very important for us at that time to balance out our way of working, because we were very much in sort of middle-class areas where people could afford the fees, because, you know, the fees were quite high because staffing costs are high, not because we were making loads of money. It's actually covering your running costs and things. But we felt it was in danger of being elitist. So if you could afford it, you could get great childcare. If you couldn't afford it, you know, what do you do? And so for us to do the nursery in Hume was a big statement about giving back and making great childcare accessible for all. And it was one that was a bit of a contentious thing for our board of directors, as we had then, because they felt, oh, we don't particularly want to. It's not part of the portfolio. And for us, it very much was part of the portfolio and a piece in the jigsaw.
So the journey of starting with that one in Wilmslow, then the workplace nurseries helped it grow, and then it grew and grew, and you ended up with 64 nurseries. Was it your vision to grow it to that kind of size?
No.
From the beginning?
Absolutely.
It happened
definitely
organically.
Not. Definitely not.
When I did that first nursery and the one next door was a challenge for me, because the first nursery, I was very much at the helm. I was running it with the staff team and very close to everything that was functioning on a day-by-day basis. To then let go of that and hand it over to a nursery manager was a big thing for me. It's like, well, can that person deliver what I'm delivering? But because we did it close to us, actually on the same site, it was easy to see and to realise that in order to achieve that and achieve more nurseries with more managers, we had to seriously look at training and how we could deliver the same quality of care. And at that point, we then achieved a training award. And that was on the basis of the staff that we were actually employing. We had very much nursery nurses who'd come out of college and they'd be 17, 18. But I was also recruiting women returners who were women who had had their children. The children were growing up, had started school, and they wanted to return to the workplace. They were such valuable members of staff, and yet they weren't classed as qualified. So they couldn't achieve a qualified salary or qualified status. So we actually wanted to address that. And we took our training program that we developed to the Nursery Nurse Training Board. And we achieved a certificate in nursery practice for women returners, which then subsequently became MVQs. So again, we were quite ahead of the game because we knew if we were going to grow, we had to grow with training.
You made a difference. So do they still run now? And do they cross over all nurseries?
It's very much the training has developed into the whole MVQ program. And
so it changed kind of everything.
Yeah, for us, it was about giving status to older women who had so much experience of bringing their own children up and also bringing that balance in of ages. So the confidence of somebody who's had their own children, but equally the confidence and the skills that come out of training at a college.
Yes.
And it was balancing it all.
The beauty was the programme that we constructed, or we contracted to construct by people who wrote the programme, was so similar to the MVQ programme. And this was before the MVQ programme, the work-based training was initiated. So again, I mean, Jeannie particularly, trailblazer, we need to train people. And really going back to staffing, it's a very undervalued career at the moment. When we went to Europe, the staffing ratios were very different. And a lot of the staff were graduates and they were paid higher salaries. And one of my bones of contention is that the staffing ratios might be too high. If they were slightly more relaxed, we could pay more staff, pay more salaries, and we could have more graduates. We do employ graduates, but we can't afford to employ many.
Yeah, without raising fees, which you don't want to do because then you don't want to make it
inaccessible. There's always this balance between... It's a dilemma between what you pay staff and what you charge in fees.
So when people look at the success of Kids Unlimited, they may not have realised some of the risks you took, those leaps of faith. Huh. How important is it to take a leap of faith in business?
It's very important. We almost lost the company in 1988 because we're taking on investors. And of course, we were entrepreneurs, but we weren't experienced in business. We're running nurseries. It was a very new concept. And our investors wanted to make money. And almost immediately we'd signed the deal. It's a business initiative scheme, enterprise scheme of some sort. Almost immediately, first board meeting, when are we going to make some money? When are we going to make some money? And when we talked about training, they said, well, we don't want to spend money on training. We just want you to make money.
They wanted to cut the training.
Really?
Yeah. And when the business was suffering a little bit, they were talking to our competitors about selling us. And this was a family thing. Our family actually put up the money to buy these people out. And so they exited and we started again raising money with a more friendly investor.
Kids Unlimited was your baby, so that must have been really hard having.
It was heartbreaking.
I can remember banging a fist on the table and just saying, how can you? You know, I felt at the time, maybe I was a bit like Greta, how dare you do this to us? Because it was like, how dare you? I mean, they were really nice guys, but they were like the mafia. And it was just like walk all over us.
They just didn't understand the heart of the business.
No, they just wanted to make money. But the whole approach to the scheme was they would invest for tax perks.
There's a tax break, yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't meant to get involved. Right. And that was my first relationship, which, as I called, men in suits. And, you know, that's why I loved working with somebody like Anita Roddick, because she was just not in that, you know, she was very much, this is my belief, this is what I'm going to do. I don't care what all the lawyers and everybody else thinks. This is my belief system. And that's where a leap of faith comes in. And for us, it was a leap of faith to get out of this scenario. And like Stuart's parents helped us with that. So it was a leap of faith on behalf of them. And yeah, we got out of it. We went back into it again in order to grow the business with more investors. And I think it was something that just didn't sit well with us.
So as the business grew, was that one of the biggest challenges, having to deal with that dynamic with the men in suits?
Yeah, yeah, because they had a different mentality. And in a way, if we'd been left to it, we would have made the money, because we were doing well, but we were doing it with integrity and without compromise. And suddenly you're having to answer to this, and you're having to answer to this bottom line and everything, which I understand, it is running a business and they were investing in it, but it just didn't sit easy with me, because I would work my socks off for anything and everybody. You know, I just didn't need to be targeted. And
just thinking about you working your socks off.
Yes.
How did you balance running a business with having kids yourselves?
Well, you may answer that, because you were at the end of
Tell us your earliest memory.
It was hard. It was hard, because as we expanded, we were all over the country. And yeah, I didn't want to leave you guys. I wanted to be the mother. I wanted to be there when you came home from school. And although we had the facilities and you and Simon could come there after school.
I loved. I loved being there.
But, you know, maybe so, it was like I was still your mom. You know, I was your mom, and I had all these other children that I was looking after. So I don't know.
Did you feel stretched?
I felt stretched isn't the right word. I wanted to be both. And it was getting the balance between being a mom and being an entrepreneur, be it that I was running a nursery, it was still an entrepreneur and it was still a business.
And then naturally, being an entrepreneur and owning a business, you're the mother of that business.
Yeah.
And you're the father of it. Like, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
So it was challenging. You know, the fact that we had the childcare on hand and everything, it didn't make it any really easier, because you know, I still wanted to be with you. I wanted you, you know, to, you were tired coming home from school, I wanted to sit and read a book with you and stuff like that, or go out in nature. I think I did an okay job.
Yeah,
but you know, there were times when it was challenging.
Do you want to add anything? Or,
well, you've got friends that stayed with you all the way from nursery through school and beyond. You know, it's, I recollect you had a lot of friends in nursery, and I think you were balanced in relating to mum as mum and nursery as a group of friends.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, it's an
extended family.
It's an extended family, but the children, but also the staff were an extended family. And then as I got older, then being around them and asking them questions and learning about what they did and seeing it from the other side. And I can remember seeing St. Mary's Nursery in Hume, and I can visualise all the spaces that you're talking about. So it's definitely, I loved my childhood.
Well, that's great.
To say that.
But as a parent, so I think balanced. As a parent, it's human nature to question.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Did I do a good job?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what was your... Well, let's move on before we get mushy.
Emotional.
What was your biggest concern? You might have touched on this already, but the biggest concern back then in terms of childcare or child development, and how did you try to resolve it then through your work? And I guess I'd like to know the biggest concern now and how what your mission is to resolve it now.
Well, we're moving into a more technological time, and although when we first started, computers and screens were very new and innovative, and one of the things we set up were computer stations, and we set up a computer program called Through the Square Window, which was amazing. And it was something whereby they would have that in the nursery, they wouldn't necessarily have it when they went home. So it was great, and the timing was perfect. But now it worries me that children are absolutely spending so much screen time. So we've made sort of more conscious decisions in the nursery to not elaborate, not extend on that sort of area of the curriculum, because they're getting it anyway. And what we're aiming to do is get children outside where they can be in nature. You know, I think although we were doing that years ago, I don't feel it was as important as it is now, because it is this environment where the TV's on all the time. There's so many programs that can be watched. They, you know, children have got phones at ridiculous ages, and we need to move them away from that. And so that's why, in a way, our nursery is called Back to the Garden, because it's actually getting children back to innocence, back to nature, back to where they can interact with things that are more real.
So you, I hope you don't mind me saying, you're in your 70s now. So yep. What led you to re-enter the childcare sector after all these years? Do you have any beliefs around retirement and work? Will you ever retire?
Well,
will you always work?
The Japanese have a phrase called ikigai, and it's a Japanese formula for happiness. And one area that they look at is, well, I think they've got the most longevity in terms of their society. And I've looked at that because obviously I'm into that age bracket, and I'm aware that I don't particularly want to retire. I don't want to suddenly go down a route of, you know, maybe sitting at home or joining a knitting group or that sort of thing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong in that, but I've still got a lot of passion in me to actually still keep doing. And the Japanese talk about non-retirement, they talk about living with purpose, and they talk about community, and they talk about nurturing your food and growing your food. And if I can develop some of those concepts through still working in a nursery environment, but other things that I still have passion to do and for my own self-development, then no, retirement isn't a word that I sort of particularly choose to follow.
So your current nursery, Back to the Garden, can you talk a bit about that and the philosophy around it, when the idea started?
There's a company, McGough, who have built nurseries. They actually worked on the St. Mary's Nursery, Jim McGough, who sadly is no longer with us, but his four sons have developed the company, McGough Construction, the McGough Group, and they have branched out into care homes. And as part of their development, they find corners of a site where there's a care home, or retirement apartments, it's a corner of a site that could be a nursery. And there's a whole philosophy about the mixing of age groups, how it works well with children, and how the children sort of stimulate the older people to come more back to life. Music and all that sort of thing, gardening. So back in about 2010, I was reintroduced to Chris McGough, I didn't realise it was him I was meeting, because a friend had said, oh, there's this company thinking about doing nurseries, so come and have a meeting. So we had a meeting in 2010, and to cut a long story short, we had the meeting and decided we'd do it. And I thought it would never happen. I thought it was going to take a long time, and it did take a long time, because the first nursery had all sorts of local authority and national trust issues. Eventually, it came to fruition. So we opened our first nursery in Broadheath, Altrincham.
We haven't had to change a lot in terms of what we did 30 years ago. And that sort of rests easy with me, because children are children, whether they were children back then or the way. And apart from things like technology and like that, they are still children, and they will still learn in the same way then that they learn today. And I am really reassured that a lot of the stuff that we did then, when we recruited a staff team, that the staff team were sort of on the same page as our philosophy way back then. Mm. So that made me feel very content in that, yeah, we were doing it right and we're still doing it right. But what we're doing it right now is with a lot more knowledge and with a company that actually get what we're talking about. So although the McGoughs might wear the odd suit, they're very, very open and supportive about what we want to do. And the synergy between us is great. And, you know, we've been given a lot of autonomy in terms of the design, and I think they value what we've brought to the table. And we can extend into things like the relationship between the elderly and the young.
The intergenerational care.
The intergenerational care.
Which we're going to be having Chris McGough on the podcast to talk about that.
And again, you know, it's like, again, that's all about balance. We don't want that to be the all singing, dancing reason for doing it. That's just an added dimension to what we're trying to do.
Well, David Williams, I heard him on a podcast recently, and he's the guy that has care homes, and he talks about the intergenerational care. And it's that thing of not jumping on the bandwagon, but it being done respectfully and organically. And it's not really like a fashion thing. It's with care, so that there's a choice there for the children and for the elderly. If they want to be together, there are these spaces where it can cross over in activities. And I know you've got this current project which you're working on in Lym, which will be the second nursery, and that is going to be a crossover.
Lym is, the care home is on the Lym site. It's the old Lym Hotel site, which has been redeveloped. And it's got beautiful outdoor area, mature trees, lots of opportunity for creating a great space outdoors.
Where they can be together.
And huge opportunity for gardening together with the older people. Because they generally, some of them have a lot of skill in that area.
I think it's also storytelling. You know, is like a really important thing for me. And we have these teepees in the grounds. And although the teepee is used for a lot of things like meditation and mindfulness and dance and movement, it is a place to gather. And I think with the elderly, although I'm not experienced in elderly care, I feel as a society, we need to put a value on that. And it's about the storytelling. You know, they have this purpose. They have all this experience. And I think, you know, that can be brought to the children. Mm. It's like the elders gathering.
In the teepee.
in our teepee. And so the teepee is a physical thing, but it's also a concept as well in terms of having that teepee. And it also fits in with this back to the garden whole concept, which is about nurturing, gathering, going back to innocence, going back to what is real, and growth. And although it's also my favourite all-time song, because it's from Woodstock, and Joni Mitchell is my favourite artist, and she sings this song, and it's just, you know, part of a life thing for me. And to be able to now, at my age, be able to put a name to what we've been trying to do and what we have been doing for most of our life in working with children, to be able to put that phrase to something that has been created is quite a special
thing. It just means,
for me,
it means so much. It's the perfect name for what you're doing. So
Kids Unlimited was a philosophy as well. Mm-hmm. No limits on children.
No boundaries.
No boundaries.
Yeah.
At this age, we adults shouldn't be putting boundaries on the children, except, you know, behaviour boundaries. But in terms of experimenting with where they're going with artwork and music, it's what comes from the soul.
If you could leave a message for future generations, what would it be?
Just do it.
Go for it.
If money, time, logistics were no object, what would you create for children?
I would create a nursery in a forest that takes on board all environmental issues, so we can engage children in the whole thing about what the planet is for, without lip service to saving the planet, but actually we all need to address that. So it would be creating an environment that actually fulfills that purpose and educates children, parents and staff in where we need to be going.
What universal lesson could be taught to children all around the world?
Love.
Looking after your environment, looking after the creatures. Because we don't survive if they don't survive.
Can I just add one more to that? That to meditate. Because the Dalai Lama said, if all children 8 years old meditated, we would eliminate violence within one generation.
Love that. Love that. What's the biggest myth around child development?
I think, myth or not, no myth, people underestimate the power of the baby's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because before a baby can actually verbalise, there's some sort of logic going on there. And I've seen illustrations of that in the way babies respond to things. They're actually working things out in a way that we don't understand. It's pre-verbal.
There's a documentary at the moment on Netflix called Babies, and it's basically showing that from scientific experiments with babies.
This, I saw one series of slides from Reggio Emilia, where there was a nursery worker with a baby, obviously of a young age, couldn't, no verbalisation at all. And they were looking at a magazine with loads of clocks and watches and things in there. And when in the time when people wore watches, the member of staff put her watch to the baby's ear. And the next slide showed the baby putting his ear to the page.
Oh, really?
And I think, what does that say?
Yeah, there's a lot more going on than we realise, and that's being proved.
Yeah.
That's a good, great one. What rights should children innately have?
The right to have a voice.
The right to play.
Great. What's your favourite book on child development, parenting or business? Something that was an inspiration to you?
The 100 Languages of Children, which is a Reggio Emilia book. But also Anita Roddick's book on business.
What's your... I've seen it on the shelf. What's your favourite quote on children?
I think the Winnie the Pooh ones are good. What's that one about putting your boots on?
When
you see somebody putting their big boots on, you're sure an adventure's going to happen. Something of that nature.
Which is on the wall.
It's on the wall, yeah.
Back to the garden.
Yeah, we put a lot of quotes around. And again, it's to emphasise our philosophy and to stimulate thought, really. Everything's quite relevant. But I also like the Lao Tse. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And to me, that is to do with a child.
What is the key to success?
Belief.
Passion.
Returning control, I would say, as well.
retaining control.
Mm. We gave away control at certain points, which was a mistake.
Is there anything that you'd like to add that I've not covered? Anything that you want to share?
I think one of the important things that I'd like to share, and this goes for over the years when we ran Kids Unlimited and where we are now, and that is we would be nowhere without the staff that we employ. And those staff are key to our success. We are only, especially as you have, when I ran the nursery, I was responsible. As soon as I handed over a level of that responsibility to a nursery manager, I am handing over trust and belief in that person. And I would say over the years, we've worked with amazing staff. And in the nursery that we have now and going forward, we have an amazing staff team. And that's what allows us to live our dream.
All together.
The nursery is a family.
Yeah.
Family of parents, children and staff. And it feels like that. Back to the garden.
Thank you so much. It's been such an interesting conversation. I've heard some of these stories before many times, and every time I hear them, I understand new bits and I just get blown away by hearing everything that you've achieved. Makes me quite emotional. So let's wrap it up.
Back to the elders again.
Yeah,
we're now those elders.
Let's wrap it up. So
you're a produce of our nursery.
Yes.
Not bad.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave us a review in iTunes or on your podcast app. Follow Back to the Garden Childcare on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. We would love to hear your thoughts on today's subject. And for everything mentioned in today's episode, you can head to the show notes at backtothegardenchildcare.com/podcast. And if there's someone you know who would love to hear this episode, share it with them today. Send them a link, screenshot the app, or just chat about it. This podcast is recorded at LBS Studios and produced by Simon Galloway. Until next time, in the words of Joni Mitchell, we are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.